Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For musicians, finding the right hairdo can be just as hard as finding the right notes. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, our fascination with musicians' hair, from the mullet to the mohawk. Plus, power pop from the Lonely Forest, live in the studio. But first, from the Beatles' shaggy mop tops to the Bieber's carefully windswept helmet, hair certainly can be a big part of a musician's identity, and that hair can also become a part of our identities as well. Later in the show, we'll speak with the hairstylist behind one of the 70s most revered and eventually reviled rock star hairstyles, and we'll speak with the stylist-turned-musician who invented and sported, yes, the flock of seagulls do. But first, joining me in the studio is Maura Johnston, music editor for The Village Voice. Maura, welcome back.
Hello.
And joining me on the line from London is the illustrator Christina Christoforou, whose new book is called Whose Hair? And proves that iconic hairstyles are instantly recognizable, even when you don't see the face that they're attached to. Christina, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello, thank you.
Christina, Maura and I have been sitting in the studio looking through your book, Whose Hair? And actually, Maura, did you notice something missing from Christina's book?
I was actually wondering where Justin Bieber was.
Christina, where's Justin Bieber?
I don't know. Where is Justin Bieber?
Is his hair just not well known enough?
No, I don't. I wouldn't say that. I guess I considered him more of a fad, really. So I didn't think he belonged in the book.
Well, Maura, when you were at your last job at Pop Dust, you folks covered the Bieber haircut.
We did.
With breaking news.
We did. He cut his hair on the set of a video that he shot with Rascal Flatts, and it was a big deal for the Bieber fan base because, you know, a couple of weeks prior I had seen the movie Never Say Never 3D, and it is a 3D movie, and there actually is a scene in that movie where it's just the camera is just trained on him flipping his hair, and his hair comes into the audience, and you can kind of maybe grab it, maybe if you really try. But actually, you know, he cut his hair and he sort of cut it from the windswept look that is so popular among kids today into a sort of more spiked do. And then the frenzy over that was actually so crazy that he sold the clippings on eBay and the proceeds went to various charities.
All right, well, that's nice. So, Christina, the idea of a hairstyle being so well known that we can even recognize it without seeing the person's face, how does a hairstyle become that recognizable, that it can sort of live by itself?
How did it become recognizable? I guess it's because we are so exposed to celebrity iconography, and because hair surrounds the face and it emphasizes, I suppose the face is the most important element of someone's image. Mm-hmm. So we do tend to focus on the hair, and we do tend to memorize it, whether we are aware of it or not.
Well, and if you'd like to take a look at some of Christina's drawings from her book, Whose Hair, on the Soundcheck page, just go to wnyc.org/soundcheck and try to guess whose hair you're looking at. You might be surprised at how many of them you actually can guess with some certainty. Looking through the book, you know, it was surprising to me, Christina, how easy it was to recognize, say, David Beckham, who is represented by actually six different dudes. David Bowie gets a page that's just plastered with different hairdos, eight of them, several of them the work of Susie Ronson, who will be joining us in just a little while. Listeners, why do you think a musician's hair matters? And have you ever copied a hairstyle from a favorite musician? You can give us a call at 212-433-WNYC or leave a comment on the webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Maura, what does it say about a musician as nonconformist, as rebel, you know, that's become part and parcel of what we expect a hairstyle to say.
Definitely,
it?
Because it is sort of like an announcer, you know, that announces you to the world. I mean, people, you know, if you have, say, big hair, which is not as in fashion now as it was, say, in 1989, you see that first, and it's, you know, it can overtake you. I mean, it can overtake you in sort of a negative way. I mean, there was a whole genre of music back when I was an adolescent that I really enjoyed, but the bands that practiced it were called pejoratively hair bands, because it was the idea that
Journey and bands.
I was thinking more Poison and Warrant and LA Guns and that sort. Yeah, and you know, you can obviously argue about the musical merits of those bands for a long time, which I usually do. But but you know, I think that let's take sort of the shift that happened after hair bands to Nirvana, where Kurt Cobain and Chris Novoselic and Dave Grohl all had this really unkempt hair because they were about, you know, the music, and they were about sort of grunge. And, you know, I think that there is sort of this weird inverse relationship with authenticity and hair in a way. It's like if you use too much obvious product, obviously you're not serious and you're frivolous and you're going to be relegated to the dustbin of pop music history. But actually that's not always the case, especially now when people are practiced into the natural look. And
well,
you know,
45 years ago, four young lads from Liverpool put product in their hair and certainly never got consigned to that particular dustbin. The Beatles, you could say that they're mop tops in the 60s kicked off the whole modern day hair fascination.
Getting late, yeah. Just wait till I straighten my tie.
The Beatles with Lend Me Your Comb, kind of evoking the spirit of Elvis and that famous do. We're examining musicians' hairdos and our lingering obsession, our continued fascination with them. Maura Johnston's with me, music editor of The Village Voice. Christina Christoforou is on the line with us from London. She's author of the book Who's Hair? And Christina, is it different for, I mean, many of the people in your book are musicians, and many of them are male. Do men somehow have more latitude with stuff that they can do with their hair?
That's a good question, actually. I think with men, just because the normal for a guy is to have short hair, I guess it makes more of a statement when they actually do crazy things with it, like the Beatles that you talked about, for example. When they actually came about in the early 60s, they, even though by today's standards their hair wasn't long, back then it was actually men who grew their hair long. So that was a statement. That was a statement of them refusing to conform to rigidly defined roles, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they non-conformed in the exact same way, all four of them,
right,
which is a little ironic. But Maura, just in kind of practical terms, is it just,
well, the one thing,
if you're playing like loud, fast rock and roll, is it just better to have lots of hair to swing around?
It's really fun to have lots of hair to swing around, I would think, right? I mean, I have not played loud, fast rock and roll ever, but I've banged my head along with it, and I've pretty much had long hair all my life, so I guess that sort of, you know, increased the aesthetic enjoyment. The person that I'm thinking of, actually, with your question, is Sinead O'Connor, who was whose obviously lack of hair was so iconic and, you know, made her so striking, especially with the video for Nothing Compares to You in the height of the MTV era, when, you know, it was a close-up on her face for so much of the time, and you had to really look at her eyes and her sort of longing, because there was nothing to shield it. There was nothing that she could put in her face to sort of soften the blow of her words and of her pain.
And Christina, you drew Grace Jones. You drew Grace Jones' hair in your book, Whose Hair. What kind of statement did that make, do you think?
Well, I would say, I mean, Grace Jones has such an androgynous look, in a way, really eccentric powerful, and in a way, in a bit scary, and not the classic feminine portrait, I suppose. And I think that's what she, as a personality, she comes out as an eccentric. So I think her hair kind of makes the same statement.
And then more recently, Maura, there's Janelle Monáe. What do we call that?
It's a pompadour, right?
Is it a pompadour?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know. It's really, really cool.
It looks different on her.
It's great. It fits in with her current look so well too. The suits that she wears that are super tailored,
mm-hmm.
And it stays put even though she's a crazy dancer on stage, which is really the testament to whatever she's putting in it.
Well, you know, her record is the Arch Android.
Right.
It does have that kind of like robotic hair thing that
right.
she's got going on. Let's take a call. Danny's on the line with us from Nyack, upstate New York. Danny,
yep.
Any haircuts out there that have been influential or important to you?
Yeah, well, I was made to play George Michael in a high school skit back in the early 80s. I was in the Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go video. And up until then, I had the classic 70s, early 80s boy cut with the perfect part down the middle. But for George Michael, I had to flip it to the side, and it's sort of been flipped to the side ever since.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
So an encounter, albeit secondhand, with George Michael's hair has been a life-changing experience for you.
Life-changing, yep.
So do you still get mistaken for George Michael on the streets of Nyack?
Not too often, not lately. Only when I wear the Choose Life t-shirt.
Thanks for the call, Danny. Let's check in the control room with our producer, Joel Meyer, who's got some of your comments. Joel.
John, here's what our listener KP from New Jersey had to say. Though she never sang a note, the most iconic hairdo ever was Farrah Fawcett. If you were alive in the 1970s, you had wings. And Betty Ann from the Lower East Side apparently wants to stop the madness, John. She writes, can we talk about weaves and extensions? Most pop queens today and American Idol finalists, post-makeover, sport huge manes of fake hair. Who are they fooling? Mark my words, we are going to look back on these dudes and cringe.
That's very true.
Is it true?
About the fake hair and everything. So.
Christina, were you concerned that some of your drawings might be drawings that are, in fact, not hair, but extensions? Did that bother you?
Not really. I mean, the image is still of hair. It doesn't really matter what it's made of to me.
All right. Well, we're talking about hair and the image it projects for musicians. And let's face it, in pop music, image is at times, as important, some might even argue more important than the notes that you've chosen to play. But what about, you know, hairstyles in music? Well, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, many, many years ago, referred to that in this song called Almost Cut My Hair.
Almost cut my hair. Happened just the other day. It's getting kind of long. I could have said it was in my way, but I didn't, and I wonder why. I feel like letting my freak.
Letting their freak flag fly. Crosby, Stills, and Nash with the song Almost Cut My Hair. Then skip ahead to Quiet Riot and their song Metal Health. Well, as Maura Johnston so ably put it before, if you're going to bang your head the way Quiet Riot enjoins you to in that song, you got to have the long hair.
Yes, definitely.
Otherwise, you're just giving yourself whiplash.
Shoulder
for no
length
good reason.
At least, I would say.
Now, can hairstyles become restrictive? I mean, you get yourself
sort of tied into a look. And then, you know, Beckham and Bowie aside, and both of them represented by multiple hairdos in Christina's book. But for a lot of us, we get an image of someone with that hair. Metallica, for example. They cut their hair and their fans get upset.
Yeah. Well, that was also, I mean, the haircutting of Metallica, which is, you know, still probably greatly debated today, is something that also represented, I think, a sonic shift for them. And, you know, it was this sort of new record that they, you know, that they were taking this new approach to their music. And I don't know if the visual presaged the reaction to the oral there, but definitely it was a big deal because they were so iconic. I mean, they're in the book as well with, you know, the long hair and the goatees, and then they went short and it was like, it was almost like an aging out too, in a way. It was like, okay, well now we have to sort of button up and get a little more serious.
So Christina, you have Metallica before the haircut, not Metallica after the haircut.
What was your thinking? Like you said, it's the most iconic haircut, and I mean, for many artists who have changed, who have chosen to change and transform themselves over and over again, it doesn't mean that they all worked as good as, you know, equally well. Even Madonna, for example, I mean, she has had hairdos that were definitely more iconic than others. And same goes for Metallica. I understand their, you know, they approach their music differently, and so they reinvented themselves visually as well. But still, their most iconic hairdo is the long one.
Well, Christina Christofferou's book is called Whose Hair? And you can sort of play along on the Soundcheck webpage, where you can see several of her illustrations of just the hair, not the faces. Try and figure out who you're looking at. At WNYC.org/soundcheck. The book is called Whose Hair? Christina's been on the line with us from London. And Maura Johnston, music editor of The Village Voice, has been with us in the studio. Christina, Maura, thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That's Joan Jett's cover of David Bowie's Rebel Rebel from originally Bowie's record Diamond Dogs. And up next, we talk to the creator of some of Bowie's more memorable hairstyles. And then later, power pop from this band, The Lonely Forest, live in our studio.
Guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the spiders from Mars. They played it left hand.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Okay, humor me for a moment and close your eyes. Think David Bowie, early 70s. Focus on the hair. Are your eyeballs burning? That flaming red mullet? Well, that was the work of hairstylist Susie Ronson. One more image to picture now. A flock of seagulls, mid-80s. That winged do was the work of frontman Mike Score himself. I'm joined now by these creators of two of the most iconic pop hairstyles. Here in the studio with me is Susie Ronson, who was formerly hairstylist to David Bowie and many others. Susie, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello.
And joining us on the line is hairstylist-turned-musician Mike Score of the band A Flock of Seagulls. Mike, thanks for being with us. Do we have Mike with us? I thought we did. Well, we'll sort his phone line out in a moment. But I wanted to start with you anyway, Susie. How did you meet David Bowie and start working on this really memorable hair?
I think it was, I mean, it's kind of accidental in a way. I used to do David Bowie's mother's hair in a local hairdressing salon in Beckenham.
Uh-huh.
And I met his wife, Angela, very crazy girl, who would come in and want very weird things done to her hair, which we managed to do. And she invited me up to meet David because he needed a new look. I think at that time he had long blonde hair, slightly curly. I went up to meet him. We discussed what he should do. And at that point, it was funny, you were speaking earlier about the Beatles growing their hair long and making such a difference. Well, everybody had long hair at that time. T-Rex was running up the charts, and I said to David, you should cut it off completely short. Of course, I had something fabulous to work with. Great face, fabulous skin, and a skinny, androgynous figure. So it was easy to create a more feminine style for him.
And who came up with the idea of going red and then redder, and then by Diamond Dogs, blood red?
Yeah, Diamond Dogs I didn't do, so that was after me. I just did the first five covers with him.
So that we're talking Ziggy Stardust, yeah, Pin Ziggy Up, Stone, Aladdin,
yeah.
Sane.
Yes.
Pretty,
exactly.
Pretty memorable,
yeah, right,
stuff.
Right from Hunky Dory, mm-hmm. really. After Hunky Dory, he had that long blonde hair. I think we looked through a lot of fashion magazines. It was a combination of ideas between me and Angela and David. And I did the front of one style and the sides of another and the back of another and went home. They called me the next day in a panic because it had gone flat and didn't look so good. And then we decided to dye it red.
Okay.
And that was it. Got the color, Schwarzkopf, red hot red. Took it round, stuck it on. And, of course, when you do color like that, it slightly damages the hair, so you get a lot more hair. And it was much easier to make it stand up.
Susie Ronson, hairstylist to, among others, David Bowie, but also Lou Reed, Iggy Pop,
yeah,
et
cetera. I did do those guys' hair,
and
too.
Your
and my darling husband, of course.
The late Mick Ronson,
yeah,
who was David Bowie's guitarist in those days. The reason, you know, one reason to talk about musicians' hairstyles is not just what it does for them, but what it does for us, the fans. You know, so many of us are like, you know, the caller we heard from earlier who, you know, kind of take hairstyle cues from the musicians they like. Mike Score from A Flock of Seagulls. Mike, were you a fan of Bowie and specifically of Bowie's hair?
Absolutely, yeah. When Ziggy Stardust was out, you know, we were young, fashionable kids and we saw that and we're like, this is our way to look different and to show the kind of things that we liked. So we basically, because we had a hairdressers ourselves in Liverpool, we took to doing our own versions of the Ziggy haircut and spiked it up and stuck the sides out and went crazy color-wise because we could do it every day. We had no problems. You know, we'd come in like with flat hair and we'd go blonde one day, red the next day, blue sideburns the next day. I mean, we just went crazy with it. And thank God it was invented.
So what did that do for you? I mean, was that like a statement of who you were in, you know, the kind of the cultural strata there in Liverpool?
Well, in Liverpool, it was pretty much the long raincoat and drab brigade, you know, and that was kind of industrial looking.
Yeah.
And we weren't like that at all. We wanted to be crazy, bright, different. And once we saw that Ziggy hairdo, that was our ticket, you know, to be a bit Bowie-ish, to be a bit more outlandish in our style than just long raincoats and stuff like that. And of course, you know, the punk scene was coming in, so mm-hmm. we like to incorporate a bit of everything, but, you know, at the time, Bowie was like our god, if you like,
yeah,
you know, and we went from that, and we went to see Bowie as many times as we could before he got so big.
Well, just to be clear, we're talking about this is now the years before you formed the band Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah,
this is,
yeah.
You're still
well,
a bunch
yeah,
of...
and, you know, this is, I mean, we didn't really form a Flock of Seagulls until right at the end of the 70s,
right,
when we started messing about. We didn't even have a name, but, you know, we knew our influences, and one of them was style.
and Susie, I mean, in addition to the impact that your work with Bowie would have on people like Mike and a generation of other fans, what did it do for Bowie to have this completely different and, at the time, unique look?
Well, you know, we were talking about this yesterday. I think that it's great attention getter. It was a great attention getter. No one was wearing their hair like that. No one had that color. He would walk along in London and he'll be stared at, which, of course, is exactly what David wanted. I mean, you can't say that wasn't what he wanted. And the same with the rest of the band. And it wasn't just the way their hair was. It was also what the clothes they were wearing,
mm-hmm.
the boots they were wearing. It was a completely new idea. I think prior to that, bands were going on stage in, you know, jeans and T-shirts. And mm-hmm. they'd come in the backstage door and go straight on stage. David and the band had costumes.
Or in the case of the cover photo of David Bowie on the album Aladdin Sane, no costume. He's wearing just basically a lightning bolt across his face.
Well, that was it. Was makeup, too.
And your hair.
Yeah.
From David Bowie, the title track from that album.
Ooh, we'll love Aladdin Sane.
little bit of the title track from the album Aladdin Sane by David Bowie. And by this point, we're talking 1973, 74.
72, 73, yeah.
This is a guy who's making his name on his image as well as, you know, the music.
Well, you have to have some substance to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can look as crazy as you like, but if you're not a good artist, then you're not going to go anywhere. I mean, David was a fabulous singer-songwriter.
And
at
the height of his game, as we were heading through.
I think the funniest thing is when you see the fans duplicate that haircut and you see them in the front row of the audience with their makeup and this bright red hair spiked up. Doesn't look so good on a 20-stone trucker, but it's still quite a compliment, I think.
Susie Ronson is with us, who created the look for David Bowie on that album, Aladdin Sane, and five of his other albums. Mike Score, the keyboardist, guitarist, singer of the band A Flock of Seagulls, took that David Bowie image and really ran with it. I mean, Mike, you didn't try and... you weren't all, like, trying to mimic or ape the look of Bowie, right? You mentioned punk and style in general. Those were in the air at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bowie was a great inspiration. And, of course, when that first came out, you know, we did copy it. But then because, like I said, we were hairdressers as well, we kind of twisted it our own way. And we, you know, the punk thing was coming in, so we added a bit of that. And, you know, my actual famous hairstyle comes from actually doing a Ziggy one day before a gig, and I couldn't get it to spike up properly, and Frank, my bass player, Frank Maudsley, he kind of put his hand on top of my head to say, get out of the mirror, go down a bit so I can see myself, and he flattened the top, and the sides stayed up, and then we were on stage, and, you know, I noticed a few people pointing at my hair, and under lights and everything, it looked great, and even my manager says, what did you do to your hair? It looks fabulous, you know, so... I looked at it again and I went, I'm keeping that. It just looks cool, you know.
You went out on stage without even knowing what your hair looked like. That doesn't sound like a hairstylist thing to do.
Well, I had my vision of it, but my vision wasn't
wasn't what the audience was seeing.
It really turned out to be.
Was Frank, your bass player, also a hairstylist?
Yeah, he was. You know, he was. And the funny thing is, we were all self-taught hairstylists. We just did it by doing friends and experimenting, you know, and learning the basics, basically, and then doing our own thing. We weren't interested in putting rollers in old ladies and stuff like that. We wanted to go crazy and do big, long fringes and you know. I mean, we were like little fashion gurus in Liverpool, you know, so we just went crazy with what we could do. And we used to have people come in just because they wanted to look different.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd get some guy come in with hair down to his shoulders and he'd go, make me look cool. So, you know, we'd just start cutting and go, oh, this looks great. That looks great. And I'd throw a bit of color back here and some blonde underneath there, you know, charge them 20 or 30 quid and off they went. And they were back next week as well. So, you know,
I just love the fact that this iconic hairstyle of yours is the result of like two hairdressers fighting over a single mirror. This guy's, you put it, a happy accident. How did the audience react?
Well, once I took that mistake and turned it into a full style, I mean, I remember one show, we were doing a fairly big show, and a little girl climbed on stage, and she was about 14, and she had a little bunch of flowers for me. And she came over to give me the flowers, and she reached up, and she touched my hair, and she fainted. And once that happened, it was almost kind of like, I am never going to change this. This is, you know, this is what's going to make the band big. And the whole thing is, if you look different and you're stylish, you're going to get more notice than just someone in a black leather and black long hair. At that time, anyway, that was the whole thing, was to look, because of MTV and all that stuff as well, you know, you were
right
on TV in everyone's front room, so you needed something that differentiated you, and hair has always been the thing that differentiates a band.
And certainly in the case of A Flock of Seagulls, at the very
Absolutely.
Beginning of MTV, you guys were all
yeah.
over the place. You were in everyone's front room at that point, and the hair certainly
yeah.
was a major talking point. Susie, you can get locked into that. I mean, we talked a little bit about this
in the first part of the show. Yes.
Someone like Bowie, for example, has changed his hair so much over the years.
Just at the right moment is my thought.
And it does seem to accompany, you know, changes in, you know, he's had a very quixotic, chameleon-like career in music.
He has. I mean, David could quite easily have got stuck being Ziggy forever.
Right.
I mean, he could have. That was his biggest success to date. And he could have got stuck there, but very brave, David, to step out and do something completely different and change his hair and his whole life, actually.
Now, among young musicians, do you see anybody out there today that you think, wow, that's good work?
Well, Justin Bieber, I have to say, is a gorgeous haircut. When I look at that, it's right back to that perfect...
Pre-haircut or post-haircut?
The haircut that he has now is a little more typical. Little spiky thing. I mean, everyone spikes it one way or the other. But when you looked at that original haircut, it was reminiscent also of the Beatles kind of a thing, wasn't
it?
Right. The swoop across, but the perfect hair, I mean, the flipping thing, well, whatever. But that perfect haircut is, I liked it. I thought it was a very pretty haircut.
Susie Ronson is a hairstylist, creator of David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust look and numerous other artists through the 70s. Mike Score with us on the line from England, frontman of this band, A Flock of Seagulls. And both Susie and Mike, thank you for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Thanks a lot.
Still to come, the band The Lonely Forest brings their sound and their only slightly shaggy hairdos to our Soundcheck studios.